rapidly than even expected. Oh my, what should we do? Well, according to the Republican presidential candidates, just ignore it. Maybe it'll all go away, but not here. Welcome to the Green Front. We are an ostrich-free zone here. I am your host, Betsy Rosenberg, and I am a little fired up today after being stuck in bed with two back-to-back colds last week and rain falling for 5 days straight in Northern California. We certainly needed it, so no one's complaining about that. But sun is out today, and I'm loaded for bear, and I'm really excited about today's stories and topics and our guests. A new report out released by the National Wildlife Federation is looking beyond the physical impacts of our favorite subject, global warming. They're looking at the psychological impacts, and the portrayal is nothing short of devastating. It spells out how climate extremes will affect the mind, spirit, and mental well-being of all of us, millions of Americans, and indicates that the burden on the nation's mental health care delivery system will be overwhelming. We'll speak with someone who worked on that study from the National Wildlife Federation in our second segment. But in our first segment, we're going to bring on Ben Strauss. He is with a great organization called Climate Central. I don't think I've had the pleasure to interview anyone from there, but it's one of the places where I get my story ideas. No shortage of those places, no shortage of green stories and climate stories to cover. He is the COO there and also the sea expert or rising sea guru, if I can call you that. Ben, welcome to the Green Front.
Thank you so much, Betsy. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, it's a pleasure to talk about all these things, because if you turn on mainstream media, and we're going to play a clip later in the show from last night's NBC network newscast with Brian Williams, even though they spent 4 minutes covering the extreme heat wave and just really wacky weather that continues, as it has for the last couple of years in this country alone, not one mention, not one word, climate was mentioned, just a sort of a vague reference to something about the jet streams, as if jet streams and climate change are unrelated. You're an expert on jet streams and oceans. Begin by just giving us sort of a simple explanation of, you know, as we see ocean temperatures rise, even if it's just on the surface, as I recall from my training back at Al Gore's Climate Change Project, that was several years ago, 5 years ago actually, I do recall there was a connection there.
Well, if you turn up the heat under a pot of water, it boils. There's more energy imparted. You expect more evaporation, more steam, more energy. So just a little bit more warmth to sea surface temperature means more evaporation. There's more moisture in the atmosphere today. I forget the exact percentage, but we've got discernibly more moisture in the atmosphere today than before we had warming. So that means more energy from more energy for storms and more possibility of extreme rainfall events. It also is really a power supply source for hurricanes.
And we're going to be talking about what the latest research shows in terms of expected sea rise. There's all kinds of controversy about that, but I trust sources like Climate Central and scientists, not politicians. There's also another story out today on the Newswire called Damage to Oceans Could Cost $2 Trillion by 2100, slugged that title. I don't know if you've seen it yet. It's on Business Green, but it says damage to natural services could reach that high if steps to curtail climate change are not taken. And, of course, we're not taking the steps we need to, so it looks like that's inevitable. Are you seeing, you know, this country just give up, I mean, in terms of leadership?
Well, I let me just refer back for a moment to that study. I didn't see it, but what I did see within the last few weeks was a review that came out in the scientific journal Science that suggests we are seeing the fastest rise in dissolved carbon dioxide in the ocean, also carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, than we know of over the last 300 million years. So, and in fact, 10 times faster than anything we've observed in 300 million years. So we really are dealing with something that has no precedent that we can relate to in terms of the speed of change. And I have to say that's what worries me most about climate change and its impacts, is the speed of change. Skeptics or deniers or anyone is right who says that the climate has varied naturally through the history of the Earth, and there have been times when the planet was warmer or cooler. But those changes happened very slowly compared to the change we're experiencing now. they were also often very damaging despite that. But if, you know, I think of an analogy with a bullet. What makes a bullet dangerous is its speed. So if somehow our climate were changing very gradually, it might not be such a dangerous thing. But I'm afraid it's changing with something closer to the speed of a bullet fired from a gun, as opposed to a bullet you're holding in your hand.
And I just found this study. It's actually called Valuing the Oceans, and they're predicting that without action, the temperatures, you know, could rise by some 4 degrees by 2100. That's in the air. But what about the ocean temperatures? Are there predictions about how much, you know, temperature change the ocean can sustain without, you know, seeing the kinds of damage that, you know, worst-case scenarios predict?
That's a good question. I think we're already headed into a danger zone for coral reefs. Ocean warming is it's a complicated subject because you've got the surface ocean, which we've measured reasonably well, temperature changes in the shallowest 200, 500 feet of the ocean. But the majority of the ocean's mass is in deep water, and we have many fewer temperature records for that part of the ocean. So how that warms and the impact of that warming, how it mixes with the upper layers, are all pretty unresolved scientific questions, to my knowledge.
And why do we hear such varying numbers in terms of expected sea rise? Obviously, it is an inexact science. We're in uncharted territory. We've never seen this before. And,
yes,
of course, there's also feedback loop impact. And so, of course, it is, in some ways, you know, bound to fluctuate. But what's your best assessment?
Yeah, well, so I'd say that the current range right now that is around 2 to 7 feet more rise for this century. But I'd say that there's more controversy in the scientific community around how fast the sea level will rise than there is around how far the sea level will rise. One of the interesting things about sea level is if you look at the very long-term record over hundreds of thousands and millions of years, there is a very strong relationship, a very close relationship between global temperature and the equilibrium or stable global sea level, which makes sense. If it's warmer, there's less ice. If it's colder, there's more ice. And sea levels have gone up and down by 300 or 400 feet between ice ages and the warm periods between them. There's a very strong relationship, again, between the temperature at any time and the equilibrium sea level. What we understand what we have a much weaker understanding of is how fast the sea level can respond if things are out of balance. Right now, sea level is lower than it, quote, should be, given how warm the planet already is. You can think of taking an ice cube out of a freezer and putting it on a table. It takes some time to melt. It takes some time to catch up. Glaciers and ice sheets are not yet caught up to today's temperature, but today's temperature is not yet caught up to today's carbon dioxide levels. And today's carbon dioxide levels, well, you know, we can't turn off that spigot right away. I would say that if we slam on the brakes of emissions, climate scientists tend to feel that we're still going to see a few more degrees of warming this century, that that's the best we can do. Last time it was that warm globally, sea level was between 20 and 30 feet higher than it is today at the equilibrium. Now, that, as your listeners will know from hearing ads for mutual funds, you know, past performance or past results do not guarantee future performance, but they're our best indicator in this case. So it really, you know, we can affect how far the sea level will rise by affecting how much carbon we put in the atmosphere, and we can't affect how fast it will happen in the same way. But I'm afraid to say that a lot is already baked in the cake. We're going to see, we've seen 8 inches in the last century, but that's unfortunately a small prelude to what we can expect this century and in the centuries to come.
Okay, thank you for that very helpful scientific review, and that leads into what must be done about it. And for that, we want to bring in D.R. Tucker, our friend of the program and my favorite climate convert, to talk about some policy changes that are needed. Welcome, D.R., to the conversation. D.R., you there? Oh, well, he was there. So tell us, while we're getting DR back on the line, hopefully, what, you know, is anyone paying attention at the legislative level, at the, you know, government level? I mean, these, you know, studies and these numbers, this research that keeps coming out every day, is mind-numbing for those paying attention.
Yeah.
And yet you walk around in the world, you turn on the TV, you watch the Republican, you know, debates, and it's like there's nothing happening. It's a parallel universe. And we're talking about, you know, climactic challenges and environmental problems that are so huge, we almost, those who are trying to cover it, can't even keep up with it. And yet, there's really no everyday discussion on it, on the street, in schools. It's really kind of mind-blowing.
Well, I'm glad you're having another segment on the psychology of this, because I think that's
exactly
a real issue. Being in this field, there's a psychological hazard. If you're following it closely, there's a real hazard of despair. The way I cope is I really think of it more as facing in a direction and trying to move in a good direction, and we'll see where we can go. I find meaning in trying to shed light on the problem, and I also kind of feel that if we are to seriously slow down this problem or stop it, it would actually be, I make an argument, it would be the greatest achievement of human civilization. I think you could make that argument.
So it might just save human civilization from going down.
I mean, like there's some real positive there, too. But in terms of seeing what people are doing, I have been pretty heads down on the science here, but we did do a survey to look and see what states and local governments might be doing that we put on our website, where, by the way, we've got a tool. You can look up your own local sea level rise flooding and flooding risk by typing in your zip code. We've got it at surgingseas.org. And we also have a page on responses to the issue, and we went around the states, and there are a lot of states and localities that are starting to look at the issue. They're drawing, you know, they're doing studies, they're starting to draw up plans, they're making statements of intention. There's very little action. The action is few and far in between. But there are more and more places that are looking at this. There's a coalition, a bipartisan coalition of four counties in South Florida, which is one of the most impacted parts of the nation.
And one of the states, by the way, that seems to not get climate change is real, ironically, based on anecdotal evidence from friends of mine and relatives who live there.
Yes. Well, at the state level right now, I think that's true. I have to say that our report that we issued last week has attracted a lot of interest and conversation in Florida. They've got it's going to come to pass that Florida will be begging the rest of the nation to help on this issue. It's only a matter of when. South Florida is built on porous bedrock, like Swiss cheese, so you can't even build a seawall to keep out the rising ocean. At least you can't do it, engineers tell me, unless you dig a 100-foot deep trench and extend the seawall down that low. And that's simply not going to be practical or affordable in any world that I can imagine. So,
okay, Ben, we have D.R. Tucker on the line now.
Oh, terrific.
And I imagine what kind of world we're going to live in. Many of us do if we don't wake up and accept the realities that are, you know, that Mother Nature is making so evident each and every day, more dramatically each and every day. And D.R., welcome to the Green Front. Sorry for the delay in getting you on.
Yes, how are you doing? I just wanted to ask specifically in terms of the New York Times report, the New York Times coverage of the of your study, they for the purposes of sort of false balance, I guess, they reached out to a gentleman named Myron Ebell, who's a member of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And I just wanted to get your take as to, you know, why the mainstream media, when they're reporting on these cases, reporting on these studies, reporting on the facts, why they insist upon reaching out to people who don't recognize facts or are in fact involved in a disinformation campaign.
Yeah, that's a good question, and I wish I knew the answer, DR. Maybe they're trying to reach a wider audience. Maybe they're experiencing, you know, editorial pressures. I do look forward to the day where, I mean, there are plenty of arguments, disputes, and fights to cover in climate science, but they're more along the lines of, you know, how bad is it and how fast, not whether anything's happening or not.
I see. And what do you specifically propose? What sort of policy would you like to see as a solution to sort of ramp down greenhouse gas emissions? Would it be trying to reintroduce cap and trade, or would you prefer a fee and dividend model? What specific proposal should be used to try to combat this problem?
Well, you know, I am not a policy expert, and I've really been focused on the science, but what's clear to me is that if we want to seriously limit the damage, we need a very serious policy. I'm very happy for the parties to debate what the best policy approach is, but I think if we're going to be serious at making a difference on the issue, it's got to be very, very ambitious, very aggressive, very, very strong and effective policy.
And let's just talk about politics, the current scene, for a moment. I mean, Ben, don't you, as we do, marvel at the lack of attention to these issues? It's no one issue. It's just the future of life on the planet that we're talking about. It's like parallel universe.
No, absolutely. At the same time, I do. I mean, it is an existential threat. That's clear to me, and that's why I've dedicated my professional life to it. But at the same time, I think it has some psychological features that make it hard for people to connect to it all, you know, every day or all of the time.
Absolutely, and we're going to talk more about that in the second segment. I didn't mean to pull you into that again, and I know you're not a psychologist, and nor am
no,
I. But,
well, I can,
but,
you know.
But here's the question. These are people, talking about the current crop of Republican candidates, who want to lead our nation, you know, one of the, if not the, you know, most influential, the strongest nations in the world, if we still are. I don't know. China's beaten us on that officially. But, you know, we should know better, right? Where's the best and the brightest of our country that's, you know, stepping up and saying we must not only lead on this, but just deal with it and let alone lead. And it's not happening. I mean, so whatever, you know, individual psychology, you know, we have to deal with, and it is, for many reasons, a difficult thing to really fully comprehend. There are enough people in this, you know, country of ours that do get it, that are very concerned, and many activists and volunteers who work tirelessly every day to raise awareness. I know Climate Central is trying to address that void. So maybe that's a good way for you to jump in here with a little bit of history about the creation of your organization and what its mission is.
Sure. And I agree. I mean, it's tragic that there is not more political attention to this issue in this nation.
It's shameful as a country. We must be laughingstock of the world if you're concerned about climate change and looking through the world through green lenses, just, you know, for starters, as an issue.
Yeah. Well, at Climate Central, our goal is to do both research and journalism that shines a light on the issue and to communicate climate change in a way that is compelling and accessible, that's graphic and visual. We use research, like the research that we did for the Sea Level Project, to generate information that people can use or that will be powerful in its communication, be effective in helping people really get in a tangible way what this means for them and locally, because we think that will help to move the conversation. We also call that scientific investigative journalism, so to speak. And you can look for a series of reports coming from us in the months ahead. We also do kind of direct day-to-day journalism covering climate stories in the news, and we're dedicated to doing it in a way, again, that will be as, you know, we really care about doing it as effectively as possible, you know, in a way that people will be able to hear and understand.
Okay, maybe this is a good time to play this clip. Can you join us for a few extra minutes?
Sure.
This is what was on the nightly news. Thanks to DR who sent this. He captures everything out there pretty much on climate change while I sleep. Every morning in my inbox there's at least 10 items, many video clips and, you know, audio clips and plenty of great blogs and articles that are posted. It really is quite revealing in that it goes on. Probably it was a lead story. I don't know if you know that DR was placed in the newscast, but not one word from either the reporter or the anchor, Brian Williams, about climate change, and they didn't say global warming either. Nothing like that. Just again, a quick reference to this is the jet, you know, the jet stream, as if it's like an El Nino effect or something that's normal. And of course, I don't think it is. I'm sure Ben and DR, you agree. Let's see if we have that clip ready from the studio.
Good evening. This is the strangest season many folks can remember. It has confused plants and animals and a good many humans across a good portion of this country. It has turned traditional seasons upside down. It has set thousands of new records. And think of it this way. Both Chicago baseball teams hold their spring training in Arizona to escape the harsh, cold Chicago winters. Tonight, on the last day of winter, there's snow in Arizona, and in Chicago, families are heading outdoors for what feels like a summer evening. That's where Weather Channel meteorologist Mike Seidel joins us tonight. Hey, Mike, good evening.
Hey, Brian, good evening to you. It was another day of phenomenal warmth way up in northern Michigan in Traverse City. They hit an all-time March high of 83 degrees. This has many wondering, has the weather lost its cool? It's a study in contrast in extremes. On the last day of winter in normally chilly Chicago, the city of the Big Shoulders has seen five consecutive days of record-breaking 80-degree temps.
No reason to go to Florida anymore. Stay right here in Chicago.
And the heat wave continues.
I've never seen people playing volleyball on the beach in March.
Incredible look at high temperatures.
Minnesota's March has been extraordinary, too. The low temperatures have been warmer than the previous record highs. In North Dakota, lightweight clothing was enough for ice fishing near Fargo in 70-degree weather.
70 degrees up here and down here, it's you're sitting on an ice cube.
Meanwhile, in Arizona, Flagstaff is digging out of its second largest snowstorm in March, nearly 20 inches, closing Interstate 40 and other major roads.
We never drove in snow before. This is the first time.
In Northern California, skiers have been waiting a long time for this snow.
There's no bad timing for snow for us here in the mountains. We love it, we crave it, and we're stoked it's here.
But what's causing these extremes? It's the jet stream reaching way into northern Canada, blocking cold air from moving south, leaving much of the country seeing red, with 34 states today hitting at least 70, while all of the West is colder than average. Adding to the weather drama, high pollen counts in Atlanta, 35% higher than the previous record. Also, wildfires in Colorado and tornadoes in Oklahoma and Nebraska, downing power lines and damaging property as residents start the cleanup. And there is a tornado watch this evening in central Texas, stretching from Del Rio up to the Dallas-Fort Worth area. There are some warnings now well south and west of Dallas. These are slow-moving storms, which will drop heavy rain. Brian?
Mike, what's this doing to the cycle of nature? All the flowers that have come up and out already that may still see some snow on them.
Yeah, that could happen, but we're in this trend right now where it's going to be fairly mild for most of us east of the Rockies. Let's talk about the storm, though. That's really going to be the serious threat over the next several days, a huge flood threat for parts of four states, Texas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, and into Arkansas. Right now, we've got flash flooding in Tulsa. We've had cars stranded this afternoon, roads closed. And look at how slowly the storm moves on the forecast map. It's going to take 2 days to get the rain out of there. Some areas may see a foot of rain. This could be historical flooding in parts of those four states. states. Meanwhile, to the north, the records continue to go by the wayside. A lot of them today, hundreds will continue to go be broken. 86 in Chicago Wednesday and Thursday. And back in New York, temperatures will stay in the very pleasant 70s. Brian?
Last day of winter. What a wild season it's been. Mike Seidel in Chicago.
Has the weather lost its cool? Well, guys, has NBC lost its credibility in your mind?
Well, it is tragic that there is so little mention of global warming in connection with extreme weather, and that's something that we hope to change over time, actually, at Climate Central. That is one of our focuses. An interesting fact of climate change is that we can expect changes in the extremes much more and much more rapidly than changes in averages. A small change in the average can lead to large changes in extremes, and I'm not sure if this is for March or for spring, but I understand right now we're setting high temperature records at 10 times the rate as we're setting low temperature records. Now, in a world that wasn't warming, you'd expect that ratio to be 1 to 1. Over the last decade, it's been 2 for warming to 1 for, that is, the ratio has been 2 high temperature records for every 1 low temperature record. But this year, it's been 10 high temperature records for every 1 cold temperature record. That is, that knocks your socks off. That is a huge effect.
A lot of things knock our socks off. DR, before you give your closing comments, I just want to ask you, Ben, if you owned a property on the coast in Florida, California, or anywhere around this country, would you seriously think twice about staying there?
Yes, I would. I would. I'd take a close look at the specifics, but I'm certainly not looking to buy. The map is going to change, and before then, we're going to see more and more floods that get higher and higher.
And it's not like the water's going to, get higher and higher that quickly that you have to run for cover so much as the value of your home is going to go lower and lower.
Well, at some point, that's going to happen. That's right.
And just to close, we had the director of the Island President, the movie that just is coming out now about the plight of the Maldives Islands, President Nasheed, pleading with delegates of the UN, climate conference last time to do something because they're going to have to move. So this is very real for many, many, many millions of people and soon-to-be environmental refugees around the world.
He understands it, and I'm looking forward to seeing that movie.
It's fabulous. Highly recommend it. DR, parting thoughts?
Yes. If you don't mind, I'd like to stick around for the second segment.
Please. Love to have you.
And also, just great, great work on your behalf, and with regard to NBC News not mentioning the real culprit here, it sort of once again justifies the need to have more green media out there that will point the finger at the actual culprit in this wild weather we've been having.
Well, all of our weather now is in the context of a warmer world.
Absolutely.
And what is that warmer world going to do to our heads and our spirits and our mental health system? We're going to find out in our next segment. We're going to take a very short break and be back with Carol Oldham. I want to thank you, Ben Strauss, with Climate Central, for all the great work you do there. I echo DR's sentiments. So many great resources out there. We just need to get more of them, with an outlet in mainstream media, and that's what we're trying to do.
Thank you so much, Betsy, and thank you very much, DR.
Thanks.
Okay, we'll be right back. You're listening to The Green Front. D.R. Tucker, Betsy Rosenberg here, interviewing one of the principals on this study that said not only are we going to have to prepare or should we be preparing for the physical impacts of climate change, but watch out. The mental impacts are going to be devastating, both psychologically and financially.
Could it really be that stuff that's sending skyward isn't going all the way? Just floating like a blanket on.
And what will